This is John Lydon of Public Image Limited, and you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
I get confused because I don't know where I stand, and then you smile and hold my hand. Love is kind of crazy with a spooky little boy like you.
This is Lydia Lunch, and while I'm lying home in bed doing what I do best, you're listening to WUSB 90.1 on the FM dial. Go back to bed.
Okay, whenever you hear the theme go on for so long, you know that there's absolute mayhem and confusion going on in the studios, and today is no exception. Wow, what a day this has been so far. This is unbelievable, both on the local and international scene. I imagine today, which is what? Someone show me what the date is. July 22nd, 2003. This day will go down in history as... Well, as the day that we didn't air the news, okay. All right, I know a lot of people are angry about that, but first of all, before you start penning those letters of complaint, and God forbid, spending money on telegrams, let me just point something out to you. Yes, Free Speech Radio News did not air tonight. If you're really, really upset by this, you can tune right now to 89.5 and hear it there, or tune to 99.5 at 6:30 and hear it then, or tune to 99.5 at 11:30, hear it. You can hear it at any time, almost. But the big point is that even had we aired the program, guess what? They didn't get the big story of today. They missed it. So it was completely useless anyway. They'll have today's big news tomorrow. We're just all so disorganized, you know? We try. We mean well, but... you know, when you volunteers running radio stations, running networks, running news agencies, you know, there's going to be these problems. And there's no shortage of problems right now. And, of course, when you're running a Mac and the news is running off of Macintosh, you know there are going to be all kinds of difficulties with that. But that's another issue. Yeah, today is the day that the United States killed Saddam Hussein's two sons. Yeah, it's all over the place. It's all over the news. Not our news. And that's why we didn't air it. Yeah. In fact, it was an intentional decision on our part not to air the newscast tonight because we thought it would be embarrassing to air something that so obviously didn't cover a major story like this. Better to hear some relaxing music so that you could hear me talk about it now and hopefully take your phone calls on this, our last show. Yes, this is our last show, at least until September, because I'm about to embark on a six-week voyage throughout various parts of Europe, including Russia and Belarus. And well, actually, you know, this is all conditional. This is all conditional on me getting my passport back from the Belarusian embassy. You see, there's certain countries where you have to get invited And I've already been invited to Russia, which is nice. But still waiting for them to finish their paperwork. And, of course, I need to get the passport back to go anywhere. So hopefully that'll work out really soon. Getting just a little bit nervous there. And locally, of course, there's a monsoon outside. It's unbelievable. I've never seen rain like this. Port Jefferson right now is in flash flood mode. You do not want to drive in Port Jefferson. There's rivers going down the roads because they have all those hills there. And people running around not knowing what to do. It's utter mayhem. Do not drive in Port Jefferson if you're hearing the sound of my voice now. And it's still July 22nd. Unbelievable. I mean, I love rain. I love thunderstorms. So I guess I'm pretty happy. But getting over here can be a bit of a challenge when you have to deal with such natural conditions. And of course, you know, there's always the idiots that you know, don't know how to drive in any situation whatsoever. And well, that just leads to all kinds of mayhem. There's an accident on Route 347, which is a four-lane divided highway. And I just happened to get there at the point where, you know, things started to hit the fan, and there was only one cop on the scene. You know, it's raining, there's one cop on the scene, obviously there's more in the way, but this is the guy in charge of directing all the traffic. And I guess he just got a little confused because he started waving cars through, and he was waving this car next to me through that there was no way it could fit because it was one of these monster trucks, you know, that people feel the need to buy around here. And there was just no space for it to get through. And so I waited, you know, to see what was going to happen. And then, you know, the next second he's pointing at me as if he had already told me to go. And saying, you, get moving, you know, like I already told you. And he didn't. He was pointing at the other guy first. We all saw it. And it got me thinking, you know, this is the attitude that so many civil servants have towards the public. That, you know, we're scum. We're people that have to be barked at, even when they're the ones who made the mistake in the first place. Rather than graciously admit, oh, you know, I messed up. You go first, not you, you know, because you can't fit. No. Instead, let's just blame the public for everything. I've seen that attitude in so many different professions. You know, I've seen it with doctors, I've seen it with salesmen, you know. But it's really, really dangerous and upsetting when you see it in cops, because they're the ones that kind of have the license to kill you. And you sort of would like it if they respected you a little bit more and treated you with a little bit more courtesy. I mean, I know it's, you know, it's a stressful job. There's lots of stressful jobs, though. You know, and you got to think about what kind of stressful job you're going to get into before you get into it. And of course, you don't dare say anything. Not that, you know, the time was right to say something about this, but, you know, you always have to, you know, walk on eggshells when there's people with big guns around you. So, you know, there's this element of fear, which some people confuse for respect. And it just, you know, sometimes it bothers me. Sometimes it bothers me a lot, especially when I read things in the newspaper about, you know, real abuses. This is nothing. It's just, this is kid stuff. But, you know, you read things in the paper about cops shooting people, saying, well, you know, I thought he had a gun. I thought he was pointing at me. He was actually pointing his finger at me, but I thought it was a gun. There was a case, you know, a few weeks ago. Actually, I think the actual case happened longer ago than that, but it was going to a jury or going to some sort of court. And it centered, I think this was in Shreveport, Louisiana. If any listeners down there, please let me know about this, where basically a cop shot somebody in the back. Yeah, and killed him. This guy that was running. He was obviously out of it. The guy was obviously plastered out of his mind. He wouldn't stop. He just kept running. And at one point, he turned around and gestured and was, like, spouting, you know, all kinds of babble and things like that. And the cop shot him. The cop shot him in the back. He said, well, you know, I thought he was pointing a gun at me. I thought my life was in danger, so I shot him. I mean, I just don't... And it's divided the community down there. It's divided the community of Shreveport because, of course, the guy was black and the cop was white. And almost completely along racial lines, the white people down there are saying, well, the cop was just doing his job. And the black people are saying, well, this guy was shot in the back by a cop. It's funny how, you know, it's a real coincidence that everybody who's black feels one way and everybody who's white feels another way. I don't quite know what to make of that. But the one issue that I think a lot of people are ignoring is, you know, was this guy's life really in danger? That's the question you have to ask, regardless of color, regardless of anything. You look at that. You look at whether or not this person was actually in danger. See, I mean, I have a lot of respect for cops. I really do. People think I don't because I'm always criticizing them. But, you know, the reason why I'm always criticizing them is because they're kind of in the public eye. They're the ones that go around with guns legally shooting people. And you have to look at every single instance of that with a very critical eye. There's a reason why they're treated as if they're better than us, because they have to deal with things that the average person can't even conceive of dealing with. Same thing with firemen. So that translates to looking at a very... looking with a very critical eye at the things that go on. And a situation like this, that simply is what has to happen. You have to second guess. You have to question. You have to really look things over very carefully. And in this case, you just have to ask yourself, how in God's name could someone feel threatened by somebody who's obviously, you know, not in a coherent state? I mean, I have a view about this, which I know a lot of people don't agree with, but I think it's really the only fair way that this kind of thing can be handled in the future. You simply make it understood that under no situation should police fire at somebody unless the person has already fired at the police. Yeah, I know what you're saying. You mean a cop has to accept fire before he can return fire? You know, that's part of the risking your life part. Because if you just go out there and say, well, you know, I think you're a threat, bang, you know. How, where's the courageousness in that? It sounds to me like you've got a big advantage then. You can walk down the street and just pick off anybody that you don't like because they're looking at you crooked, or they're pointing their fingers at you, or, you know, running away from you in the wrong way. Yeah, it sucks. It sucks having to wait for somebody to actually fire at you before you can do something about it. But I think that's part of the heroic stance that, you know, we expect from people in law enforcement. And if you look at it, yeah, you will have more police wounded. You'll have more police killed, probably. Although, by how many, who knows? Look at all the cases over the past years, decades, where innocent people have been killed. Innocent people have been killed. And look at the response that has gotten from the community. Many more innocent people killed, and riots that follow, and all kinds of misunderstandings and bad feelings and hostility and things like that. You know, when you go to a demonstration someplace, the police are immediately seen as the enemy without having to prove anything. Why do they have this perception? Because of the way things play out. Because of the way it's shoot first, ask questions later. It's a tough job, but it ain't being done right in many, many places. And you just got to be very... I mean, we see it all the time. How many times have you been in New York City and you see cops flagrantly violate the rules, you know, or just walk all over people, or just treat them like they're garbage or dirt? And people take it because they're afraid. And that should never be a reason to take anything. You know, little things like cops just going through red lights, you know, that's understood that they do that. Why do they do that? What's the reason? The laws don't apply to them? Of course the laws apply to them. I think we should call and complain every time we see a cop doing that. I mean, yeah, you have your lights on, you're going somewhere, it's an emergency, you know, fine, we understand that. But when it's not an emergency, why don't the rules apply? You can see just as much sitting at a red light that could be a potential crime as you would going through it. In fact, you might even see more. Happened to me a few weeks ago, actually, right out here. You don't often see it. Mostly it's in New York City where the cops go tearing through the red lights. But out here, I was in Port Jefferson Station. I was with a friend. We were... actually, you know what? I can get somebody in trouble by pretty much figuring out when this happened. It was right outside the Port Jeff Station Fire Department. For some reason, okay, this is interesting. For some reason, cops always hang out at fire stations. You notice that? They're always there. They're not firemen, and firemen aren't cops. Well, sometimes I guess maybe they do both if they can't get enough suffering. But what is it? I mean, you know, what draws them there? Why don't they hang out at the police station? Why do they hang out at the fire station? I'm convinced it's got something to do with the flashing red lights. You know, if you have flashing red lights on top of your vehicle, cops will come and hang out with you. I guess, you know, you trade stories about the flashing red lights, maybe about the sirens, or test them out, or compare them, or, you know, that kind of thing. There's something like that going on. I don't know. I've never dared to venture over there to find out just what they're doing in the fireplaces, firehouses, rather. But, yeah, so they were hanging out there. At least that's what I suspected. We were heading towards a shopping center. It was pouring rain again. It always pours rain around here. And my friend and I were going to get Greek food at the Port Jefferson place there in Port Jeff Station. And they were coming out. At least I saw two cars coming out of the fire station. We're waiting at a red light. The fire station's to the left. I see these two headlights heading towards me. And I, you know, in the back of my mind, I think, you know, those are probably cops, because who else is going to be exiting a fire station, you know, in a car? But I keep staring straight ahead, because I don't want to look them in the eye, because they might see something in my eye that, you know, will mean I'm guilty of something, and then, you know, then I don't get to the place I need to get to on time. Well, what do you think happens? All of a sudden, all these lights start flashing, and, you know, they tear through the intersection, which, you know, the light had just turned green. They got ahead by one car. These two guys got ahead by one car by doing all that. And as soon as they get through the intersection, they stop flashing all the lights and they just keep driving. You know, they just did that to get through the light. It gets better. When we went to the shopping center to pick up the Greek food, we see them down the other end of the shopping center running into the pizza place. Yeah, it was an emergency. They had to run to the pizza place to get there on time. It happened like 9:30 on a Saturday night, so, you know, if anybody can figure out which cops those were, I've just gotten them in trouble. But even if, you know, it's probably not even a violation to do that. But that's the kind of thing, you know, where it's an abuse of authority. And people, you know, it sort of settles inside you. And you lose respect because of things like that. And, of course, you know, shooting in the back, that kind of thing. You lose respect for that as well. You know, I hadn't planned on talking about any of this. I plan on talking about what's going on in the world. But I see some parallels. You know, I see some parallels between how cops are perceived here and how soldiers are perceived over in Iraq, where it's pretty much the same thing, where, you know, you're kind of running roughshod over the people and they wind up resenting you greatly and sometimes striking out in various ways. What's going to happen after today? That's a very good question. In case you have not been paying attention to the news today, some very dramatic developments have been taking place. Where do we start? Well, okay. Let's take a look at the news. And again, our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. If you have something to say or comments, opinions, advice for me heading to Eastern Europe, please give us a call. We'll be taking calls probably in about 10 minutes. How's that sound? All right. Just, you know, keep your finger on the button. That way we'll be able to get a lot of people in, assuming there's a lot of people out there. Okay, a senior U.S. general says Saddam Hussein's sons, Odai and Qusay, were killed in a firefight today in a villa in northern Iraq. American troops stormed the villa on an informant's tip that the two were inside. Odai and Qusay Hussein were numbers 2 and 3 on the list of most wanted Iraqi officials. Now, if you go to the CNN webpage, which I did immediately as soon as I heard about this, it's repulsive, it's pathetic, it's ridiculous. This is a, you know, it's a serious thing. It really is. It's a serious news story. What's their headline? Trumped. Trumped with a picture of the two cards that the two sons are pictured as, you know, in that stupid deck of cards. Yeah, Trumped. We beat them at cards. I mean, come on. And the thing that really gets me is that every time they capture one of these major Iraqis, no matter what the news agency that you're watching, they hold up the picture along with, you know, the ace of clubs or whatever it happens to be, as if that's a valid form of identifying somebody by looking at them on a deck of cards. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. So, yeah, CNN's making a lot. And CNN, you know, they're the most intelligent of the American, you know, broadcast multimedia TV news people. a lot of qualifications there, I know, but they're the best we have, I think, on a major level. My advice for people that want to know what's going on, go to NewYorkTimes.com, read that once a day, you'll get a sense of things that are going on. And BBCNews.com, you'll get more of a sense. And on that subject, I did go to BBCNews.com after that to see, to compare, you know, see if they did the same thing with, you know, Trumping. And no, they do, you know, hard news. Saddam's son's dead. The U.S. military says it believes Saddam Hussein's sons were killed by U.S. troops on Tuesday. And then much more detail. And that's how you do it, you know. That's what news is about. You report the facts. And I got to say, you know, the BBC has really impressed me with the way they report the facts and the way they stand up for what they believe in. I'm sure some of you have heard this over the past week, but I know many other people haven't because I've had to tell many people about it. But the BBC has been involved in a battle with the British government over the past several weeks concerning a story that was based on information from an informant that basically said that one of the dossiers that was the basis for entering the war in Iraq was, I believe the quote was, sexed up. In other words, exaggerated. In other words, a lot of it was not true, including the whole weapons of mass destruction being launched in 45-minute thing that, you know, was touted everywhere, as well as Iraq trying to obtain uranium from Niger, which our own President Bush quoted in the State of the Union address. Lies, mistruths, bad information. And BBC got this information from an unnamed source. Now, the British government went nuts. They wanted the BBC to either take back the story because they were criticizing the Prime Minister and implying that he was spreading false information, or reveal the source. And they refused to do either one of those things. They steadfastly refused. They protected their source, and they would not retract the story. And then things got really, really interesting. There was testimony given by a former UN weapons inspector and microbiologist named David Kelly. I watched part of this on BBC last week, where he was being questioned rather in a hostile manner by people in the government, accusing him of being the mole, you know, the person who leaked the information. And he could tell this guy was just, like, not used to this kind of thing. This was a scientist. This was somebody who, you know, worked in the world of science, had no interest, knowledge of all this political mayhem that was going on. And you could just see the discomfort. And then a couple of days later, he went missing. He disappeared. And his body was found in the woods near his home. And after that, after it became somewhat apparent, although there's always going to be people who doubt this, and I'm not sure if I'm one of them, but it became apparent that he had killed himself because he just couldn't take it anymore. At that point, after conferring with the family, BBC announced that, yes, he was indeed the mole. He was the person who had given that information to them. And they had gone out of their way to protect his identity even when he was being accused directly by the government of being that mole. And at that point, after he had died, it was most likely, after conferring with his family, they agreed that it was most likely in everyone's best interest to know the truth, to know who was the person who said this. And it's such a tragedy to know that this kind of a thing happens, that somebody comes forward and reports something and is the ultimate victim in it. It's really, really sad. And it's probably the biggest crisis to face Tony Blair yet. This even goes beyond the war, because now you're seeing truly innocent people victimized by this. People who are doing what they thought was right. And everything this guy has said so far, everything that he reported to the BBC, has been backed up. None of it has been thought of to be a lie. But to face that kind of pressure when you report your own government as being less than honest, to face that kind of a thing, I don't know how many of us could take it. I imagine quite a few couldn't. And obviously, David Kelly could not. Now that's big news. You know, that's really big news, don't you think? You know, the whole basis for going into Iraq in the first place, being questioned by this one guy who basically is driven to suicide because he spoke up. Or maybe something even more nefarious happened to him because he spoke up. Who knows? Whatever it is, it's a big deal. I picked up the paper the day after this happened. Newsday here on Long Island. I picked it up. And what's on the front page? In fact, what's on the front page of every single newspaper and the headline story of every single newscast? Some basketball player accused of having sex with somebody. That is the top story in our country. I mean, yeah, you know, rape is a serious issue, and basketball is a serious issue. I realize that. But come on. This is the world. This is affecting millions of people. And since we're so heavily involved in it, you know, I'd understand, you know, if we were in Tanzania or something, you know, and we had absolutely no involvement in any of this, then I could understand having a story, you know, that's basically just something that happens every day, and because it involves famous people, all of a sudden it's supposed to be more important. Maybe then I could excuse that being the lead story. But, you know, come on already. This story, the story of David Kelly, it appeared on page 5A the day after it happened. It's pathetic. It's really pathetic. Anyway, Kelly was 59 years old. He became involved in the storm over the intelligence on Iraq's alleged banned weapons when the government said he was the source for a report by the BBC that officials hyped or sexed up data in a September 2002 dossier to justify war. BBC reporter Andrew Gilligan cited a single unnamed source as saying Blair's press chief, Alistair Campbell, had insisted on including a claim Iraq could launch chemical and biological weapons at 45 minutes' notice. A parliamentary probe later cleared Campbell of that allegation. Kelly gave evidence last Tuesday, a week ago today, to a parliamentary committee regarding the government's dossier and the BBC report. And during that committee meeting, it was suggested Kelly was being made a fall guy for the Ministry of Defense. The MOD said it had at no point threatened Kelly with suspension or dismissal as a result of his admission that he had spoken to Gilligan. He was told he had broken civil service rules by having unauthorized contact with a journalist, but that was the end of it, the MOD said. Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet. You pissed off the Ministry of Defense. You made us look like fools in front of the whole world. But you know what? Forget about it. Live your life. You got 24 hours. On Friday, a close friend said Kelly's wife had told him the scientist, who had three grown-up daughters, was deeply unhappy about his role in the political row about the weapons of mass destruction and was under great stress. TV journalist Tom Mengel told ITV News, "She told me he had been under considerable stress, that he was very, very angry about what had happened at the committee, that he wasn't well, that he had been to a safe house. He hadn't liked that. He wanted to come home." Don't you think that's interesting? Why was he at a safe house? Was his life being threatened? Was he in danger? Seems awfully odd. And then as soon as he comes home, this happens. She didn't use the word depressed, but she said he was very, very stressed and unhappy about what had happened, and this was really not the kind of world he wanted to live in. Well, if ever there was a human face that could be put on what we've been through over the past few months, I think David Kelly is that face. Now, moving back to today's news. Yes, the Hussein sons are dead. And what kind of effect is that going to have? The thing is, you know, I find it very interesting. Everyone's going around cheering that these guys are killed. And, you know, probably the Iraqi people are better off with them gone. I'm not going to question that. But what nobody seems to be questioning is the fact that we can just go around and kill these people, you know? Because they represented the old regime. I mean, that's really it, isn't it? I don't know of any other accusations against them, specifically by the United States. Were these people launching weapons of mass destruction? What were they doing? They were sons of a leader of a country that we decided we wanted a different leader. Pretty much, right? I mean, it wasn't about saving people's lives. You know that, right? You know it wasn't about saving people's lives. Because if that's what we cared about, why would we let the slaughter in Liberia keep going on? 600 people killed in the past couple of days. You've been following that one? And Bush is in such an uncomfortable position because all of a sudden the rest of the world is starting to believe the things he says where, you know, we don't need the UN. We can go in and fix this on our own. Okay, help us. We need the help. You care about people so much, come and help us. People from both sides of the fight in Liberia wanted American troops there to help, to keep the peace. And Bush, whoa, he was called on it, and he did not want anything to do with that, apparently. Stalling as much as he possibly can. 600 people killed in the capital in the past couple of days. Bodies being piled in front of the U.S. Embassy now. The United States is being blamed for not caring. We sent 41 troops in. 41 troops. And that's to protect the embassy, too. So, yeah, you got to look really hard at these things. All right, let's do a couple of obituaries and we'll take some phone calls. Let's look at Odai Hussein. He had a reputation as a brutal and sadistic man who helped his father eliminate opponents. Military officials say Odai Hussein, who was behind only his father Saddam and his brother Qusay on the U.S. list of most wanted Iraqis, died today alongside his brother in a firefight in northern Iraq. Can you say martyrdom? Yeah. I'd like to think that, you know, this will bring about peace, but somehow I'm wondering if it might be fanning the flames a little bit more. I don't think anybody knows where it's going to go from here. Odai had helped his father exert iron-fisted control over the Iraqi people. Iraqi exiles say Oday murdered when he wanted to and tortured with enthusiasm. They say he routinely ordered his guards to grab young women off the street so he could rape them. And as head of Iraq's Olympic Committee, he allegedly oversaw the torture of athletes who failed to perform. A human rights group says he once made a group of track athletes crawl on newly poured asphalt while they were beaten. His tendency toward erratic use of brutality even exasperated his father. Saddam temporarily banished Oday to Switzerland after Oday killed one of his father's favorite bodyguards, reportedly in full view of guests at a high society party. Oday headed the Fedayeen Saddam paramilitary unit, and he was once a strong candidate to succeed his father, but he was badly hurt in a 1996 assassination attempt. His younger brother instead was groomed to succeed Saddam, and that worsened relations between the two brothers. So, you know, this isn't exactly a nice guy. I don't think anyone's saying that. But there's lots of nasty guys out there. Lots of them, in many different countries. And some of them are our friends, you know? Some of them are people that the United States gives lots of money to. You have to wonder, you know, if we can just take these guys out, well, why can't we take the other guys out? Okay, now for the other brother. Qusay Hussein was trusted by his father and feared by Iraqis. Saddam Hussein's younger son, Qusay Hussein, was one of the most feared men in Iraq. There's a lot of feared men in Iraq right now, actually. Military officials have now confirmed that Qusay and brother Oday were among four Iraqis killed in a raid today. Qusay was more subdued than his older brother Oday, but he held wide-ranging powers over the nation's ruthless security apparatus. By the way, just let me step out of this story for a second to ask, how many people out there knew these guys' names before, say, a year ago? Before 6 months ago? Before last week, even? I imagine a lot of people probably heard of them in the last few months because they have been in the news, but then again, if you read Newsday, you probably didn't realize that. The thing is, you know, if these were the people so most wanted, they'd be household words. I mean, Saddam Hussein is a household word. Everybody knows that name. Osama bin Laden, household word. Everybody knows it. Anyway, continuing. Qusay was more subdued than his older brother, but he held wide-ranging powers over the nation's ruthless security apparatus. Qusay was trusted by his father, thought to be his heir before the regime crumbled. He is number two on the U.S.-led coalition's list of the most wanted officials from the former Iraqi regime. Iraqis nicknamed Qusay the Snake for his bloodthirsty but low-profile manner. The Snake, yeah. I wonder if you ever watched The Simpsons, you know, and took notes. Anyway, he oversaw Iraq's notorious detention centers and is believed to have initiated arbitrary killings to relieve prison overcrowding. Witnesses tell human rights groups that Qusay supervised executions of inmates who were dropped into a shredding machine. I'm not, you know, trying to belittle accusations, but every time you hear the phrase "is believed to have been" or "witnesses said this," those are things that can be abused very easily. I'm not saying they didn't happen. I'm not saying they're not true. It could be much worse than that. But you just have to be very, very wary of these things because there are obviously people with big agendas out there. And the United States right now really needed this. Today was a banner day for the United States as far as propaganda goes. You had Private Jennifer Lynch showing up back at her house. Thank you, everybody, for the heroic rescue, which BBC, among other news agencies, is questioning just how dramatic it actually was. And you have this, you know, when we're losing one soldier a day, it seems now, one unnamed soldier a day, lot of people starting to question, why are we there? What's going on? Where is this going to end? And now we get this, which is the shot in the arm that the United States needed. And it's like, you know, it's like that day where the U.S. was welcomed, where the statue of Saddam was pulled down and people were dancing in the streets. That day. I say that day because it really was that day. The next day was different. So the question now is, what's the next day going to be like? What's the next few weeks going to be like? And I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go from here. It's going to be rather interesting. You know, was it really just these two guys that were keeping the entire Iraqi population in fear and keeping the resistance movement going? Probably a bit more complicated than that, and we'll probably find out fairly soon. All right, 631-632-WUSB is our phone number. If people call in, we'll go right to the phones. A couple more news items here. Iraq's top civilian administrator says the reported deaths of Saddam Hussein's sons are good news for the Iraqi people. Paul Bremer wouldn't comment on how their deaths would affect security in Iraq, but Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez in Baghdad says the situation is likely to improve. 631-632-WUSB. Let's take a phone call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Pretty good. How you been?
I'm fine.
I was just calling earlier about what you said earlier with the cops.
Uh-huh.
In front of the fire stations.
Yeah.
If you notice, for the most part, they're not even going to be inside of their vehicles. And if you've known anybody that's been a volunteer fireman, firehouses are nothing but porn and beer. So it's an even scarier sight that the cops are staying at the firehouses all the time.
I've never been in a firehouse, so I wouldn't know what goes on in there.
Yeah, I've had a few friends who are volunteer firemen. It's pretty much just a big screen TV, usually a keg of beer, and then just tons of porn.
Wow, but then they get into the fire trucks and they drive to the fires, you know, with all the porn and beer on their minds.
That's just the way it goes.
Wow. Okay, well, thanks for that revelation.
No problem.
All right, take care. 631-632-WUSB. Wow. Of course, I do not in any way intend to denigrate the character of the many decent firemen and policemen out there. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that if you're, you know, watching pornography that you're not decent. I'm just saying that, you know, maybe the swilling beard type of thing before going out to a fire isn't the best, you know, idea, the best way to get the job done. 631-632-WUSB, give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. Again, this is our last program for the summer. So if there's something you want to say, now's the time to say it, because you won't get the opportunity again, at least not here. That's right. It's very true. 631-632-9872. All right, let's go to one more phone call, or as many as we can get. We have five lines here. One's ringing. We have four open lines. 631-632-WUSB. Country code is 1 for those of you out there in other parts of the world. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Lake Grove.
Lake Grove.
I was just wondering what kind of computer network and computers they have in the studio there.
Oh, boy. Well, this won't take long to explain. We have an iMac that's staring me right in the face. Hang on a second. There, I just hit it. This iMac has Free Speech Radio News on it, and it won't share it with the rest of the studio. Apparently, it won't connect to the rest of the board. I don't know what the problem is. I only got here a couple minutes earlier. Other than that, you know, we've got a couple of little PCs around for record check-in and things like that, Radiothon data, but not you know, all that big a network.
Now, when people on the air like are reading the news or the weather, do they read that off a website typically?
What happens? No, we have another computer. This isn't part of our network. It's part of the Associated Press. But we have a computer where we used to just constantly print out, you know, paper all the time. And it was a big waste because, you know, we read maybe, you know, 1% of it at most. A lot of it was completely boring and useless, like lottery numbers in Pennsylvania. Now what we have is we have a screen-based system, and you can simply go to a particular story or a particular set of headlines, and you simply hit F8, and it prints on the printer in the other room. You walk into the other room, and you get it. And, you know, a lot of paper is saved, and it's up to the minute.
Do you still print it out, though?
Well, yeah, I print it out because, you know, leaning over to read the screen, it doesn't quite work on radio. And having a paper in front of you, I don't know, just somehow it adds something to it. But I only have 2 sheets of paper here as opposed to, you know, the many reels of paper that would be used in a single day otherwise.
Oh. And like Free Speech Radio News, you just download that right over the internet?
That gets downloaded every day. In fact, I think every station that airs that downloads it off the net. And we succeeded in downloading it today, but it didn't, for some reason, this machine isn't communicating with the board. I'll try to have a look at it after the show. It's kind of hard to troubleshoot while I'm on the air. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Why do I get the feeling that I've just been audited somehow? All right, good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Emmanuel, it's Random. How are you?
Random, how you doing? You're from North Carolina, right?
Yes, sir.
Former resident of this area.
Yes.
Yes. Well, how have you been?
All right. We're having roughly the same kind of weather you are.
Oh, yeah? What is it, a hurricane or something?
I have no idea. It's probably all the way up the East Coast, but we had like quarter-sized hail before.
You know, I could use some hail. We never seem to get hail around here. We get thunder, lightning, but no hail.
I remember hail once in Long Island when I was a kid.
Uh-huh. Is that what drove you to North Carolina?
No.
Oh, okay. So what's on your mind?
I sent you a couple of pictures. I did a little unofficial study down here. I got the war stickers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've deployed them in the place that I thought was best.
Yeah, did they fade like everybody else's? Oh, wait, did they even stay up?
Actually, the ones that I had looked pretty good.
Uh-huh.
But mine didn't have a chance to stay up. I wanted to see in a fairly rural community exactly what the longevity would be of having one stuck up there on a stop sign.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be a day and a half.
That's all, huh? A day and a half.
Made it a day and a half. Put it up there one night. Oh, by the way, I got the sweatshirt.
Oh, great. The 2600 sweatshirt.
I like it.
It's good reviews from you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
and the off-the-hook t-shirt is great, too.
Well, maybe if people are interested in getting their own 2600 sweatshirt, they can go to the 2600 website and look at the information there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Avoid the winter rush.
Avoid the winter rush.
Only 2600 could release a sweatshirt in the middle of the summer.
Well, but, and get away with it, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm not sure how many people are actually going for this, but, you know, they are really good to have for those chilly summer nights.
They are suitable for skulking, yes.
Very much so, very much so. We've seen some skulking going on with them already.
Well, listen, I wanted to ask you if you found yourself a new place to live.
Oh, yeah, no, that's taken care of. Actually, that had been taken care of before we lost the old place.
Talking
about the Cedars. It was more just sort of a gathering place for so many people here at the radio station that we were memorializing, not so much a particular place of residence.
Ah.
Yeah.
Very well.
But, you know, for the next 6 weeks, I'm going to be living on the road, so it doesn't really matter.
I wanted to wish you a good trip.
Well, thanks.
I'm sure you have fun.
Thanks. I'm not sure. I think we'll be airing repeats of this program in the next 6 weeks here. And in any event, Off the Hook, I'll be on live each week on WBAI, so that ought to be interesting, too, seeing where I am.
I'll be there.
Great. Well, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
All right. Have a good one, Ian.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
631-632-WUSB. You know, we had a full switchboard just a couple of moments ago. I know it times out. Don't give up. Call back if it times out. Good evening. You're on the air.
How you doing? I just want to talk to you about the police you brought up before.
Sure.
Actually, two things. There was a police officer killed a couple of years ago. They had his funeral in Smithtown. I don't know if you remember that at all.
I remember one more than a couple of years ago. Was this the one with all the beer drinking going on?
Yeah, beer drinking.
Yeah.
You're outside, closing off roads because they wanted to hang out in the bar.
Yeah, I remember that.
No, just give you a thought of what the police department's like. That's really it. They're nothing but a gang themselves.
Well, you know, I see what you're saying. I don't want to you know, categorize an entire group of people in one particular way. But when you think about it, it is a gang of people walking around with guns.
Absolutely.
And any gang of people walking around with guns is going to command respect and intimidate people, and you respect them for the wrong reasons.
Not the police department either. Suffolk County has like a 97% conviction rate,
mm-hmm.
which is mostly because of plea bargaining, which, as you can see in the last few years since DNA evidence comes out, how many people have been innocent put in jail because of plea bargaining.
Right. Right, absolutely.
The police are just like radar detectives at the airport. They're really just a show. They really don't do much of anything
mm-hmm.
except for the show, you know? And people catch on to that.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the radar detectives at the airport, they're not stopping people from getting on with whatever they need to get on with.
Right.
If they really want to.
Right, you mean the metal detectors, right?
And do you really think that guy committed suicide in England?
I've got some strong suspicions. But, you know, we may never find out. And that's an unfortunate fact. Whether he committed suicide or whether he was murdered, you know, I think the result is the same, that this guy didn't deserve to die, that he told the truth, and look what happens when you do that.
Right. Well, suicide to murder, I think, is a little different. And pretty much, I guess you think I'm over cynical, but I think everything that the government tells you basically is a lie.
Well, no, it's a healthy way to think, because if you believe that, you know, it's basically, well, prove me wrong. Any journalist should assume anything they're told is a lie. And I think any listener listening now should assume anything they're being told is a lie.
Well, most people don't, though.
Yeah, most people blindly accept. It's easy to do that, but, you know, you don't know the facts, you don't know what's going on in the world, and you have the wool pulled over your eyes.
Well, over the last 30 years, it's pretty good evidence of the government lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say there's a lot to back that up.
Okay.
All right, thanks for calling.
Please.
Good evening, you're on the air.
Well?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I heard you were going to Belarus.
Yes, Belarus.
That's like your worst nightmare, because...
It's my worst nightmare there?
Well, yeah, because Belarus has everything that you're fighting against, like Lukashenko.
Uh-huh.
And if you protest against him, you get jailed, and there are, like, secret police. They go around and without any uniform or anything, and they watch you. So mm-hmm. if you do something, you can get arrested.
Uh-huh.
Like,
have you been there?
No, but I know a lot about it.
Yeah, well, I've been doing some research myself. In fact, over the past couple of weeks, I believe they've been shutting down one of the opposition newspapers.
Yeah, they do a whole lot of stuff. You know, like people get fired from jobs, and they close down theaters that supposedly have plays that are targeted against the government. Mm-hmm. And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, there's something fascinating about that. I mean, I've been told on many occasions that if you want to go to Soviet Russia, you can still go to Belarus, and it's almost like being there again. They have statues of Lenin and Minsk and all kinds of things. And, of course, the horrors of World War II are very much, you know, still a part of society there. You see towns that have been completely, you know, wiped of the Jewish population, and... It's, you know, I don't mean to make light of it at all. I want to go there and see just what this part of the world is like. And, yeah, it's going to be scary. I went to Romania once. That was scary as hell.
Yeah, that's how it is. And Lukashenko, he's like Stalin there, because he even made uniform that's like Stalin's,
mm-hmm.
if you look at it. And it's a scary place, so.
Yeah, well, no, don't worry. I'll be scared when I'm there. I'll be plenty scared.
Yeah, so good luck.
Thanks. I'll report back. All right. 631-632-WUSB is our phone number. And, yeah, I'm going to be – if it's anyone listening, let's see, what countries am I heading to again? I'm heading to Poland, Kaliningrad, which is a part of Russia that is separated from the rest of Russia. Very interesting place. Used to be part of East Prussia, I believe. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Finland, Russia, Belarus, and the Czech Republic, as well as France, Holland, and Germany. That's in the early part when I head over to the Chaos Communications Camp, which, by the way, you know, it's not too late to get involved in that. If you want to go to a hacker camp, see what that's all about, learn a lot of things, have a lot of fun, go to CCC, or www.ccc.de/camp, and learn all about that. It's one of those experiences that only happens once every few years and kind of brings the hacker world together in various ways. We have a couple of minutes left, and we have no phone calls on the line. So if you want to be the last person to call in on this our last show of the summer, please feel free to do that. 631-632-WUSB. Hear about this? The cops were called to the House of Representatives. Capitol Police were called on Friday to a contentious House committee meeting marked by a Democratic walkout and accusations of name-calling, vulgarity, and physical threats. Witnesses described flaring tempers. One GOP lawmaker said he almost came to blows with a Democratic colleague he said was threatening him. Turns out the Democratic colleague who was threatening him was 72 years old and was basically calling him a fruitcake or something and saying... come over here and make me, or something like that. And this bonehead Republican guy decides to call the cops because of that. He calls the cops, you know, they get there, and they're like, what do you want us to do about this? Do deal with it yourselves. Good Lord. 72-year-old congressman. Threatens to kick someone's ass and the cops are called. That's the state of our government now. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. And the Democrats walked out because, well, they just were upset with the way that particular subcommittee was being run. So you basically have not a whole lot getting done in Capitol Hill. All right, let's take one more call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay. I'm going to miss the hell out of you.
Well, I understand the feeling.
I really, you know, I know the other people that don't always call. There's a lot of people that are going to feel that way. There's one less intelligent voice every week.
Well, hopefully there'll be repeats.
That'd
be nice.
I listen to them, you know, at work. Sometimes I put them on and just go back to the website.
And, of course, we'll have Off the Hook each week as well, and that'll be coming to you live.
Oh, right. That's good.
Yeah.
Have
and
a trip.
Yeah, hopefully in September, everything, you know, I won't be detained in any of these countries, and, you know, everything will work out nicely.
And you're coming back to USB?
Yes.
Oh, good.
If they'll have me.
Oh, very good.
Yes. So, we're just about out of time. So thanks for being the last call. Thanks for the support.
Have a great trip.
Thank you. I will try, and I'll try to bring back something for everyone.
Great, thanks.
All right. And, yes, that's going to just about do it for us here on this edition of Off the Wall. It's been fun. It's been great. We've done a lot of stuff over the past several months, and hopefully we'll get to do more of it starting in September. And over the next few weeks, we hope to have some repeat broadcasts so you can see some of what you might have missed. And I'm going to be having some adventures. We're going to see just where that winds up leading me. Hopefully to some better conclusions about humanity and that kind of thing. It's Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have yourselves a good night. Have yourselves a good summer. See you on Off the Hook, WBAI, Wednesdays at 7. Stay tuned to WUSB. That blues is up next. Have a good night. Let's get it together tonight. On Saturday night, there are 10 million tons of water thrown into the air while we chat to bodies like we didn't care. Can somebody tell me? Thrown into the air while we chat.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.